You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner, a book entitled True Knowledge of the Christ, composed of two lecture cycles from 1907. I'm on the second one, an early cycle on the Gospel of John. This is the 22nd section of the book. However, it is the seventh lecture in these eight lectures on the Gospel of John, translated by Anna Mois, given in Basel on the 22nd of November, 1907. Everything written in a document, such as the Gospel of John, is significant and important, and nothing could be put in a different way from how it is written there. Why, for instance, does the Holy Spirit appear as a dove? To explain this would need a number of lectures, but we can at least get some idea if we look at the evolution of humanity from a point of view that differs from the one taken so far. Something said in an earlier lecture, which must seem outrageous to those who think in terms of natural science, is that man existed from the very beginning of evolution, and that humanity have made the evolution of the earth also their own. Evidently, we must not forget that earlier human beings were organized and constituted in a very different way compared to present-day humanity. Even the Atlanteans looked very different from people today. The difference is much greater for people of the Lemurian age and still greater for human beings at the time when moon and sun were still connected with our planet. To find our way into the spiritual scientific view of evolution, we have to start close to home. Not all human beings living on Earth today are at the same stage of development. Let us take the nations that have become known with the discovery of America, for example, and refer to an episode that gives us some insight into the thinking of those nations. As you know, the white people had pushed the Native American population further and further inland, failing to keep their promise that they would give them land. A Native American chief once said to the leader of a troop of European conquerors, quote, "You pale faces have taken our land, promising to give us other land instead. But the white man has not kept his word to the brown man, and we do know why. The white man has small signs that have magic spirits in them, and uses these to look for the truth. But what he is learning is not the truth. It is not good. The brown man is not looking for the truth in such small magic signs. He hears the, in quotes, great spirit in the wind, sowing in the woods, the sound of the brook. The great spirit tells him what is right and what is wrong in lightning and thunder." Close quote. Native Americans have preserved belief in a monotheistic spirit that speaks to them from all the sounds of nature. The Native American is so closely bound up with nature that he still hears the voice of the sublime creative spirit in all natural sounds. Both races have the same origin. Both are descendants of the Atlanteans, whose faith was monotheistic, deriving from a spiritual clairvoyance. This development must always be taken into account. It may be put as follows. Our planet has been changing through the millennia, and this change also played a role in human evolution. Lateral branches that were no longer fitting in with conditions grew decadent. So we have a main trunk in evolution and side branches that deteriorated. Going further back from the time on Atlantis, when Europeans and Native Americans were still one, we came to a time when human bodies were still relatively soft, jelly-like in density. There, again, entities were branching off and lagging behind. those entities continued to develop, but in a downward direction. And those were the tribe of monkeys or apes. Branching occurred at a point where this original form had opportunity either to ascend and be human or to fall and be a caricature of a human being. We'll only look at the theory of evolution as much as is necessary to find the connection with things said in earlier lectures. In the people of ancient Atlantis, the ether body was still outside the physical body. Today, only the human astral body is outside the physical body, and this only in sleep. Today, people are, therefore, only able to overcome the physical body's tiredness in sleep, for then the astral body is outside the physical body and thus has opportunity to work on it. Other influences on the physical body are now no longer possible. Only remnants of such activity still exist in the phenomena of turning red for shame, pale with fear and shock, and so on. Yet the further we go back in Atlantean times, and the more the ether body was outside the physical body, the more was it able to reconfigure the physical body. The ether body's mastery over the physical body was so great in those times because the physical body was still much more supple and flexible than it is now. At a time in human evolution, when the physical body was only a finely differentiated first beginning of the skeleton, the power of the ether body over the physical body was so great that human beings were able to lengthen an arm, a hand, at will, let fingers project from them at will, and so on. This seems absurd to modern people. It would be quite incorrect to imagine Lemurian man to have been like modern man. The Lemurian human beings did not walk on their limbs the way we do today. They were more or less creatures of air. All the organs of modern man were only hinted at. Lemurians were able to metamorphose. It is quite incorrect to imagine that Lemurians were similar, grotesquely so, but still similar, to modern man. In Atlantean times, too, the human body was still capable of being shaped and could be reconfigured from inside, using the will. The reason was that the ether body, as I said, was still partly outside the physical body. The ether body, therefore, worked on the outer form, and the entities that did not work on their body in the right way developed into what we call monkeys or apes today. That is how these caricatures of the human being of today arose. They are descended from us, not we from them. The question may be raised at this point as to why it was the apes that split off. Why did some remain behind at a lower level as entities without a soul? I'm speaking of the higher soul, not the astral body. You see, conditions changed. Human beings adapted, but they were not able to do so. Their physical body hardened, whilst human beings were able to keep their physical body soft and supple. For the beginning of Earth evolution, we have to think of human beings having a subtle etheric body. They refashioned it more and more. A clairvoyant would have seen the human being as a sphere at that time. It was relatively late in the Atlantean age that the genus branched off, which later became the apes of today. Certain higher mammals had branched off earlier on in Atlantean times. Certain lower mammals branched off in the earliest Atlantean age. The physical human being was a mammal in developmental terms at that time. However, the mammals remained at this stage, whereas human beings continued to develop. At an even earlier time, the human being was at the reptile level of development. The body was completely different from that of a present-day reptile, but today's reptiles evolved in that their bodily development grew decadent. Human beings develop their inner principles, but reptiles remain behind. A reptile is a retarded brother of the human being. Even earlier than this, the future birds branched off. And before that, the human being was at the level which has been preserved in the fishes of today. Nothing higher than complicated fish forms existed on Earth at that time. In the far distant past, human beings were at the level of an invertebrate creature, and the unicellular creatures called Monera by Haeckel branched off first of all, one of the oldest brothers of man. If we use this sequence to create the genealogical tree of man, it will agree with the one which Haeckel presented in his books, and there is then a list of 25 listings, and they're mostly in Latin. I will not be reading them. Continuing, we might actually adopt Haeckel's tree, the only difference being that he let the animal forms arise first and then develop all the way to the human stage, whilst we see the very first form as man, with the animal world branching off as human forms that had grown decadent. Man is, in fact, the firstborn on earth. Humanity continued to develop in a straight line, leaving the other life forms behind at various stages. If we consider the time when birds and reptiles branched off, we see that physical human forms truly existed at that time, which were similar to the later bird species, and others similar to the later reptiles. The seer looks back to that distant past when the spiritual nature of man had not yet taken possession of his body. He sees the generic soul of the human being floating around the bird-like body. The spiritual entities that had no need to descend onto the physical plane stayed behind at this point. Having come down to this level in the physical world, they developed further spiritually. These are spirits of the astral plane, the world of the Holy Spirit, which have reserved the airy sphere for their realm, just as human beings took possession of the physical earth, the earth sphere, for their realm. We have to think of these spirits assuming the bird form if they are to be physically visible to us. This is why the writer of the Gospel of John had to use the dove as the symbol for the Holy Spirit, which comes down into the spiritual soul of Jesus, filling it as spirit self. This symbol gains most marvelously in depth when we consider it in connection with the evolution of humanity. Let us connect the words in the Gospel of John with human evolution on earth from a different point of view. For this, we'll briefly recapitulate an idea of Rosicrucianism. At a certain stage of development, the pupil was told, quote, "Let us consider the plant in relation to the human being. The plant directs its root downward, toward the center of the earth, which is the seat of its eye, capital. Chastely, it turns its organs of pollination to the sun, the light. It opens its flower and lets its fruit ripen in the light of the sun. This fructifying action of the light is called being touched by the sun's sacred lance of love in occult science. It calls forth the flower and makes the earth fruitful. The root which the plant sends down into the soil corresponds to the human head. Human beings turn their head to the sun, the light, and they modestly turn the organs of fertilization, which the plant turns to the light, down to the earth. The human being is the inverted image of the plant. The animal is between the two. We draw the plant in the vertical, direct it down into the earth, the human being equally vertical but turned away from the earth, and the animal horizontally. This gives us the form of the cross. Plato put it like this, "The world's soul is crucified on the most ancient world cross." Close quote. The cross is a cosmic symbol, put there into world evolution. The pupil would be profoundly moved when thus able to look into the process of world evolution. We thus see the plant, too, as a brother spirit from a far, far distant past. Originally, man, too, had been an etheric entity and plant-like in substance. At that time, the human being had the material nature which plants still have today. If man had not transformed the plant substance into flesh, he would have remained as chaste, as pure as the plant. He would never have known desire and passion. But that state could not be maintained, for human beings would then not have awoken to self-awareness. They would have stayed forever in the dream life in which plants still are today. Human beings had to be filled with desires and passions, had to be taken to existence in the flesh. Not all organs were transformed at the same time from plant to flesh substance. The organs which give expression to the lowest drives were last to be drawn into evolution in the flesh. They are already getting decadent. The reproductive organs preserved their plant nature longest. Old legends and myths still tell us of hermaphrodites. Those were entities with sexual organs that were not flesh and blood, but had plant nature. Some people believe that the fig leaf that the first human beings had in paradise reflected their embarrassment and shame. Quite the contrary. The story reminds us that human beings had reproductive organs of plant nature rather than of flesh. Now, a look at the future. The organs in the human body, which are even today of a low nature, having been the last to be included in fleshly nature, will also be the first in the human body to drop away again, to disappear, shrivel up. Human beings will not continue at their present level. They have descended from the pure chastity of the plant to the sensuality of the world of desire, and will rise again from this to be chaste again, their substance cleansed and pure. Some organs in the human body are breaking down. Others are at the peak of their developmental potential, and others again are in the early stages of development. The reproductive organs belong to the first group, the brain to the second. Organs that are still in the germinal stage are the heart, the larynx, and everything connected with creating the word. The organs developing from them will replace the reproductive organs in their functions and go far beyond them. They will be voluntary to the highest degree. When human beings produce forms in the air as they speak, and the word will be creative, that will be the time in the future when humanity has regained the chastity that plants have preserved, but it will be a deliberate chastity. For the spiritual investigator, the heart, too, is only in the early stages of evolution. It is not the pump which people, thinking in materialistic terms, say it is. Belief that the heart is the cause of blood circulation is erroneous. Horrible though it may sound, the movements of the heart are the consequence of blood circulation. In future times, when humanity will have reached a higher level of evolution, the heart, too, will be subject to their conscious will. The potential is there, evident in the striation which heart muscle shows, like all voluntary muscle. Human beings will then deliberately create their own kind through the word, and human substance will be chased and purified. The calyx, opening to the sun at a lower level, taking in the sun's ray as love's arrow, will at the higher level, reached by future humanity, be the chalice open to the cosmos, a chalice fructified by the Spirit. This is represented as the Holy Grail, the luminous chalice which medieval knights were seeking. Let us consider how the plant relates to the earth. Plants have only a physical and an ether body, and so their level of conscious awareness is like the one human beings have in sleep. Animals have a group awareness. The conscious awareness of plants is concentrated in the center of the earth. Plants are bound up with the earth in such a way that they have to be regarded as parts of it. Individual plants do not have an astral body. Instead, they are embedded in the earth's astral body. The earth's astral body interrelates with that of the sun. We also find a process similar to the alternation between sleep and waking consciousness of human beings in the higher organism of the earth. In consequence, plants sprout in summer. They germinate, grow, open their flowers to the sun. In winter, the sun's astral body withdraws from the earth. The earth's astral body is left to itself. It withdraws to the center of the earth, and the earth's vegetation is at rest. The seer is able to observe this relationship between the two astral bodies in detail. The withdrawal of the astral body causes vegetation and vital activity to come to rest, and conscious awareness was also interrupted. Because of this, human beings had to be given their own astral body in the course of their evolution, for this alone would give them continuous conscious awareness. So far, we have been considering the significance that the Christ had for human evolution. Let us now also consider the significance of this spirit for cosmic evolution. The spirits, which at the very beginning of Earth evolution had already achieved the state of perfection, which humanity will only achieve by the end of Earth evolution, have their seat on the sun. The Christ as cosmic power is one of them. At the beginning of our present Earth evolution, his astral body was therefore connected with the sun's astral body. His seat was in the sun. With the coming of the Christ on earth, the astral body of this cosmic power of the Christ spirit also came down to earth. And since then, his astral body is continuously connected with the earth's astral body. With the coming of the Christ on earth, the earth's astral body was given a completely new substance by the sun's astral body. Someone looking down on the earth from another planet at the time of the Christ would have seen this new substance being added to the earth's astral body, for the colors shining out from it would have changed. By connecting his astral body with that of the earth, the sun spirit, Christ, became the spirit of the earth. The Christ spirit is sun spirit and at the same time also earth spirit. From the moment when the Christ walked on the earth, he has continued to be connected with the earth. He has become the spirit of planet earth. The earth is his body, and he is guiding earth evolution. This connection was established on Golgotha, and the mystery on Golgotha is the symbol for what happened for Earth evolution at that time. Four main races share possession of the Earth's surface: the white, yellow, red, and black race. But the atmosphere which surrounds the Earth is the same for all. This is indicated in John chapter 19, verse 23, quote, "When the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took his clothing and made four shares, a share for each soldier. There was also the tunic. Now the tunic had no seam, but was woven in one piece." Close quote. The Christ's clothes are symbolic of the earth's surface, but the tunic, woven in one piece, symbolizes the atmosphere, undivided and indivisible, encompassing the earth on all sides. It has to be stressed once again that this symbol, too, is at the same time also historical fact. This also explains the words of the Master. He said, quote, "He who eats my bread has lifted up his heel against me," close quote, John chapter 13, verse 18. If the Christ is the spirit of the planet, if the earth is his body, Is it not fair to say that people eat his flesh and drink his blood, and in doing so lift their heel against him? And are people not walking about on the body of the spirit of this planet, lifting their heel against him? When this spirit points to the fruits of the earth, surely he may say, quote, "This is my body," close quote, and pointing to the pure juices of plants, quote, "This is my blood," close quote, John chapter 6, verse 56. And people are surely lifting up their heels against him as they walk about on the earth. This was not spoken of as something bad, but merely to mention the fact that the earth is the true body of the Christ. This passage in the gospel must therefore also be taken literally. And the mystery of Holy Communion serves to remind us of this great truth. You only know how to give Holy Communion its true value if you are sentient of the importance of the Last Supper for the whole of cosmic evolution. You see the power of the Christ as the plants shoot and sprout from the ground in spring, turning to the light of the sun. You know that when the Christ became man, this was not just a human, but a cosmic event. That is the end of Lecture 7, which is Section 22 in this book.